I've always been somebody who's been able to see the glass half full. Some argue that the glass is half full. Some argue that it's half empty. I say that it's a refillable vessel. And I thought, that's me.
Welcome to the Resilient People Podcast. My name is Janet Fanacki. I speak with extraordinary, regular people from around the world who are admired for their resilience. They've overcome major challenges in their lives and then created something to help others be resilient too. Last December, I turned 52. Many of you who follow me will remember that I shared my birthday with my husband, Adam. We were both born on the same day, same year. My bragging right was that I was 10 hours older. This birthday was my first without him, first as a widow and as a single mom. When my mom separated from my dad, she was in her early 50s. My mother-in-law was a widow at 49. Finding yourself suddenly single in midlife can be unnerving. It's not what any of us who get married plan on happening. And it can be difficult to figure out who you are now. For Elizabeth Verwey, she had a major shift in her life when she was 56. Her husband, whom she had known since she was 17 and married when she was 19, had decided that he wanted out of their seemingly happy marriage. She found herself as a single mom and faced her fear of being alone. I met Elizabeth pre-pandemic in her apartment in Toronto, where she shared her story with me.
So, tell me about yourself.
Well, I don't know how I was born in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
And I came here quite young as a child, but my parents were always modeling that, so I'm very open. From birth to 19, I moved every 2 years.
Oh.
My mom just liked to move. She loved She just loved knit fresh starts.
Oh, wow.
She would just, you know, she didn't like to decorate, and she would just get a fresh painted apartment usually,
but wow.
Some houses. Okay. And then, I know, it was crazy. And so,
was that fun or was it disruptive?
I'm somebody who sees a lot of positives. So I think it's really interesting because I became very resilient as a youngster being moved and being told like, oh, this is your new school. And you go in and you make new friends. You figure out how to do it. But sometimes when I think about it, she would arrive at my bedroom door and with a cardboard box and say, whatever doesn't fit in the box isn't going, right? I would be like,
don't get too attached.
Yeah. I've always been somebody who's been able to see the glass half full. Actually, I just posted on Spoken Lives something, a little quote I found, and it was like, some argue that the glass is half full. Some argue that it's half empty. I say that it's a refillable vessel. And I thought, that's me. Like, I'm always saying to people, like, my brother dying. Oh, I mean, it was devastating. And for 10, he died on Groundhog Day. So for 10 years, I, you know, kept crying every Groundhog Day, right? I'd wake up again. It was Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Then I finally cracked the grief thing around that. Now I can see that it just made me so focused. And like every year I have a birthday, I think, oh, like I'm 62 now. And I think, oh, I've got 12 more years than my brother got. Like, it's just so, it's the silver lining of losing somebody, right? That I was overwhelmed for a little while, but then it was like, oh my gosh, like, what can I do, you know, to live life fully? So I made a list, actually. I read a book, and it's called The Aladdin Factor. The year my brother died, I don't know if it was before or after, but when he died, the challenge was to make a list of 100 things that you want to do before you die.
Okay.
And I thought, well, you know, so I found 47 or something that I would want to do. And I put them on a flip chart paper by my bed and I would wake up and think which one's next. And then when I turned 50, it was just like, it was like I was plateaued. It was like, okay, I've done all this stuff and I'm just going to enjoy this year. But then when 51 came, I really couldn't get motivated to be driven anymore. It was just like, I'm just going to enjoy this. And then when I was 55, I realized that I had a lot of fears that were holding me back. And the first fear I had to deal with was the fear of living alone, because I'd met my husband at 17.
Right.
And we hadn't been happy for a while. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't go to counseling. And for years, we'd been talking about this. And I thought, well, I have to do something or else he's just going to stay stuck forever. Mm-hmm. So I said to him, well, I'm going to move out if we're not going to counseling. And we can go to counseling if you wish after that. I'm happy to. But we have to go to a separation. Mm-hmm. And so then we went for counseling for, it was almost a year. It was 11 months we were in counseling. And then he asked for a divorce. He called the woman he's living with now that evening and asked her out for a date.
Oh, wow.
So I guess he kind of already had mm-hmm. moved on.
Even as a successful and award-winning business mentor to many clients, Elizabeth found herself having a fear of being alone in her mid-50s. So Elizabeth made a list of all the things that she feared and decided to tackle them one by one. What she discovered was that it was exciting to do things on her own, and she learned a lot about herself.
So living alone, the fear of living alone, the fear of heights. My father was really afraid of heights, and he kind of taught me the fear of heights. The fear of sharks after Jaws. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
And I was born, you know, swimming in the ocean, right? So even being in the ocean after Jaws, it was very difficult, you know. If a little fish went by my leg, it was like,
oh. Yeah, of course.
So when I went to South Africa to mark my divorce, I went shark cage diving.
God.
Yeah. So it was really
awesome. What was that like?
It was really awesome.
Yes.
And I also did, on that trip, I did tandem paragliding, where you get a lesson on how to handle the parasail.
Wow.
So, you know, I just kind of felt like I was just breaking free of all these constraints. And I call him my husband, right? He was my husband because I can't X him out of my life. He's such a big part of my life. And I think of him as a brother that I can't really live with. You know? And he was a police officer. So he was very, like, you know, constrained. Like, I was often, Elizabeth, don't do that, you know. So there were many ways through the fear, getting rid of the fears, that I was freeing myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Spoken Lives is an event that Elizabeth Verwey started in Toronto. Pre-pandemic, it was an evening where like-minded women gathered together over dinner to listen to an empowering speaker, share their story of adventure, success, and what they learned along the way. Now these events have been taken online, and they are just as motivating.
Direct result of my divorce, really, is I have a large circle of friends, and they were all asking, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm self-employed, so accommodating, like having people over, was a little tricky to have a lot of people. So I started having these, I called them nurture nights in my home. And I'd have a potluck, and I'd have a massage therapist in the bedroom, and people would just slip away and have a mini massage and come back out.
Nice.
And
it
was really nice. And people would say, oh, can I bring a friend? Can I bring a friend? And I said, well, this is a tiny apartment. The last one.
And these were friends that would generally be here.
Yeah, friends. But then they'd bring friends that I didn't know, right?
Right.
So the last one, there were 20 women in the apartment.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I thought, this is crazy. Like, I'm paying my cleaning woman. I'm getting food ready. You know, a potluck, you still need to get a certain, little bit of this, that, and the other thing. So I rented a place for about the same money, really, as it cost to get the massage person and cleaning woman. And it sold a lot of tickets. I just kept going. And like I said, 2 years in, I thought, the rent had gone up and everything. I thought I should get a sponsor and not just always be kind of underwriting this or breaking even.
Yeah.
And so, I started making some money, and I thought, whoa.
And what's that process done for you?
Well, it's a lot of people, a lot of storytelling people have reached out. It's broadened my network. Mm-hmm. It's also made me really perk up my ears when somebody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you one quick example. A woman was in the front row last time at my Spoken Lives, and her head was totally tattooed.
She lost, tattooed. Okay.
And I was fascinated with it, but I didn't have time. So afterwards, I said to somebody who was sitting at the table, what was her name? And I went back on my ticket sales and found her and emailed her and said, would you be willing to share your story? Mm-hmm. And she just broke up laughing when she phoned me. And she said, I was at a restaurant on the Danforth and my friends started talking with the table next to us. And this woman at the table next to us said, you should speak at Spoken Lives about your tattoo. She said, and I looked it up and I bought a ticket and I came, but we didn't have a chance to talk. Okay. But then here I am hunting her down to tell her story. But somebody had told her that on the Danforth. You should share your story at Spoken Lives. And the story quickly is that when she was 9, it happened. And alopecia, where all your hair falls out. And at 16, her father came to her and she said, my father, who we never spoke about anything, he said, it's time to start wearing wigs.
Oh, okay.
And so she started wearing wigs until she was about 40. And then with the support of friends, she started wearing scarves and stuff because wigs are itchy and everything.
Yeah.
And then she was traveling, extensive traveling, and she was in Bali. And somebody said, well, you should get a tattoo on your scalp. And so she was thinking about, what kind of tattoo would she do? And then she was talking to people about it. And then somebody said, well, do you know that there's spiritual tattooists? She said, no. And so she met this guy who interviewed her with his wife and they did an extensive interview. And he came back with all these suggestions. And it's quite beautiful. And it is very spiritual, like you can really see.
What does the audience tell you? What do you hear from them?
Oh, they just are totally inspired, and they just feel their heart opening. I have people come up to me and say, well, I can't say too much because I'm going to cry, but that was just so beautiful. And that's where somebody said, it's like chicken soup for the soul live, And I always say that you can come as a single woman into this room, and because I have an icebreaker, the model, Spoken Lives, has an icebreaker that you can come in and talk to anyone about this icebreaker and you instantly got people, because it's a very open environment. So a lot of people, I'll see them exchanging cards or, that sort of thing. So that's always nice.
Sounds like your parents really did a very good service to you by raising you to be open and the fact that you modeled yourself after the way they were, and this is just kind of carried through throughout your whole life.
Yeah.
Where because of that openness, you're now welcoming people into your life professionally and personally.
Well, it's so interesting because now that you say that, I think, well, when my son was 6 weeks old, I went to a women's group called Take a Break. Within weeks, I was volunteering at their Christmas thing, or volunteering to organize their Christmas thing. And then I ended up running a group. And then I ended up supervising women who were running groups, all volunteer. After that folded, the YWCA folded it, I was part of the group that raised the money for a current group called MumNet.
Oh, I was part of MumNet.
Yeah.
In Leaside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loved it. Well, I loved it. Exercise for an hour. Did not love that part.
But that's part of it.
But my friends and I just had a laugh, right? And we're still friends to this day.
Yeah, I know, isn't it? I have a friend I met in prenatal with my son, 38 years ago. But all that has all played into what I'm doing now, right? It's a full circle of bringing women together, facilitation, like facilitating, teaching people how to facilitate experiences. Like people have often said a gift for structuring a discussion. And when I would take a break every 10 weeks, I would have a minister in to talk about sexual abuse because I was raped when I was 13 and I felt that that had to be talked about, not my experience, but it had to be talked about. And there was always somebody in the group who, for the very first time, shared her story. And consistently, it was 8 out of 10 women who had been sexually molested or raped. And we're not talking anything light, right? 8 out of 10 in every group. And I did those groups
that you facilitated.
I did those groups for years. 8 out of 10, every 10 weeks. Basically, the hour of structured discussion, I found that easy to structure a discussion, to take any topic and make a structure around it so that there was a warm-up around it and there was, and so that's really what I'm doing with Spoken Lives. Like, it's an experience. It's not like come out and hear four women speak.
Right.
It's like come in as a stranger and leave as a friend, right?
Right.
Like come in, the icebreaker allows you to start a conversation with anyone in the room. The group is very welcoming. And then we hear some really, you know, heavy stories that end well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you come back. Like, there's women who have been to every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's women who bring other people. They introduce a different, they buy two tickets for the event and they bring a different person every time.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's really a strong community feel.
What would you say are some other ways that you found that helped you in your most difficult times?
I have always relied on quotes. So one quote that has gotten me through, like, honestly, most of my life is whatever you focus on grows. And so when I find myself really stuck in a negative thought pattern, I'll like write it out on a sticky note, put it on my computer, or, you know, write it on the bathroom mirror.
That quote.
Whatever you focus on grows.
It could be bad. It could be good.
Yeah.
But if you're focused on it.
Yeah. I have a choice to focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I find myself really focusing on negative things, then I'll say, okay, what do I want to focus on? When I started this business 20 years ago, I kept a gratitude journal and a successes. So on one side of the page, I put, I'm grateful for, and one side, I put my successes, and I wrote in it every night. And I had, in my marriage, I had at the head of the bed, like just a row of these. And I would sometimes just wake up and not want to get out of bed
of
and get my life started, right?
Yeah.
And then I would pull out one of those books and look at all these successes and the things I'm grateful for and go, you know.
You can do this. Yeah. It won't be easy, but you can do it.
Yeah. I have quotes everywhere and I have little books of quotes. But one of my favorite ones is from James Thurber. Let us not look back in anger or forward in fear, but around in awareness. And I love that quote. It helped me let go of a lot of the anger that I had.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me let go of the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, just like look at this beautiful day. And learning to live alone at 56 was hell. That was actually so hard for me. And I would go this walk out to the library just to be around people or go to the grocery store. And just like be around people. And sometimes when I would leave the apartment, now it doesn't happen now, but sometimes when I'd leave the apartment, you know, in the morning, I'd say hello or good morning to somebody. And it would be the first person I talked to. And it would be like 11 o'clock in the morning. It was just unbelievable to me. And I think they don't even know that they're the first person I'm talking to. So now when I'm always very friendly to people in the neighborhood. One of my friends actually said, I feel like I'm with the mayor of Broadview Avenue.
King of Kensington.
Or no, that's right. Actually, you said the queen. I said, no, the mayor. Don't make me a queen. But yeah, it's because I think 80% of the people in this building live alone. So I might be the first person they're talking
to. Yeah. Does it make you reflect on those early days?
Oh, sure.
And how you felt and just how you're going to kind of carry yourself forward?
Yeah.
Because you're conscious.
Absolutely. Very conscious. And, you know, especially sometimes I see somebody with a walker or I think they're just in recovery for something. And I say, hi, oh, I like your jacket or like your pin or, you know, isn't this a beautiful day? And they just look at me like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
you know,
you're paying attention and how nice.
And I think that took like less than 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
You might have made their morning, maybe their day.
Yeah. Everybody's got a struggle.
So what would you say to somebody who's struggling?
I mean, a lot of people let other people drive them crazy. And so I had on my fridge when I first was here, nobody can drive me crazy unless I give them the keys.
Mm.
And so I used to always focus on that because we can lose a lot of energy letting other people drive us crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel so sure that they are driving us crazy, but actually we're giving them the power to do that. There's actually somebody who just recommended, actually, she just recommended this fella's work.
Everything is here to help you.
And so she says, things don't happen to you, they happen for you. For me, what I took it as, say the divorce, let's say my divorce. Mm-hmm. Instead of that happening to me and being a victim that my husband asked for a divorce, it's happening for me to uncover something
else that's waiting for you.
Since that first meeting with Elizabeth Verwey, we've kept in touch, and I've attended a few of her networking events, both in person and online. I asked her recently how she's been doing during the pandemic. As a self-described uber extrovert, Elizabeth has learned to spend lots of time alone over the last year. She is so grateful that she had time to practice before the lockdown. A woman with a big heart and a natural community organizer, she thinks about people who have had their relationships break down over the last year and how hard it must be for them to be thrust into living life alone. So she's now hosting a tea time on the second Sunday of each month to connect with her community of speakers and attendees. There's no fee to attend. It's just an opportunity to chat and have a human connection. Elizabeth really embodies the idea that you can take a negative experience and turn it into something positive. For this reason, she is one of my resilient people. I'd like to thank Elizabeth Verwey, and I'd like to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Resilient People. You can find Elizabeth at spokenlives.com and on Facebook and Instagram. To learn more about me and other resilient people, visit resilientpeople.ca or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Today's episode was produced by Edit Audio, with thanks to Abby Gibson, Steph Coburn, and Sophie Shin. I'd love to know how you stay resilient. Is it through quotes like Elizabeth Verwey? For me, it's from music that really gets me in my soul. It's also from regular people who've overcome something who I find the most inspiring. That's the whole reason for this podcast. Feel free to share with me what keeps you resilient. And hey, if you or someone you know is considered to be resilient, I want to hear from you. Send me an email, info@resilientpeople.ca, or contact me through the website, it's resilientpeople.ca. Maybe I can have you on as a guest on an upcoming episode. Till next time, I'm Janet Fanacki. Bye for now.
Divorce sucks, but it doesn't have to be all bad. Hi, I'm Leanne Townsend, a family law lawyer and partner at the law firm Brody Thorning LLP. I'm also the host of the Divorcing Well podcast. Divorcing Well aims to help provide listeners with the tools and knowledge they need to support themselves legally, financially, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. I want listeners to tune into Divorcing Well because they are looking for the knowledge and inspiration to get them through the rough days. And on the positive days, they will gain the tools that they need to heal and move through the various stages of grief that divorce can bring. Each week, I interview an expert or a guest who's been out there in the trenches going through divorce themselves, sharing their stories, their knowledge, their inspiration with listeners, so that ultimately I can help them to divorce well. You can find my podcast on all podcast platforms or visit my website at www.leannetownsend.ca.